Tonight, it's our first Dealer's Choice, where the three of us have each chosen an episode of Star Trek to discuss. It will be The Trouble with Tribbles, City on the Edge of Forever, and Next Generation, Inner Light. Star Trek Weekly starts now!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome to Star Trek Weekly with a very unlikely Beatles song to bring us in. But, spoiler alert, it's called The Inner Light. And the episode of Next Generation we're going to talk about is called The Inner Light. And, Frank, did you know that Ron Moore, who did not write that episode, but he always wanted his episodes to have obscure Beatles titles. And so he actually got the title of the episode to be called that. He wanted to call a different episode Revolution, but they'd had one called Evolution, so they couldn't do it. So was like something that he was focused on. So anyway, I was reading that, and I was like, oh, right, that's what the song should be. But anyway, welcome. I'm Christian Byde at ChristianDMZ, and joined, as always, by Carrie Lane. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And I know the answer, but just for the sake of the show, I'll pretend I don't. Hey, Frank, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at HappyGoJackie.
So what have you guys been up to the last week?
Oh, I'm not creating new life.
Or new civilizations, perhaps.
Yes.
That's true. For those that aren't in the know, either I had my wife give birth to our second son, a daughter named Lucy, or I was just passed out on the bridge for 20 minutes, and I lived an entire life where my wife had our second son. I don't know which one of those actually happened. I did learn how to play the flute, so I feel like maybe I don't have a daughter.
Well, share their stories.
Yeah, somebody asked.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I have two kids now. My little daughter named Lucy. My wife said no to Uhura. She said no to Kirk. Aww. Spock. Bones was a contender, but ultimately we went with Lucy. So anyway, very exciting, a little sleep deprived, but it's great to be here with everybody on the show.
You didn't even try 7 or 9?
Just 7 I was going to try, but she just wasn't having it. You know? She's very anti-Borg, my wife. Like, go figure, you know? What have they ever done to anybody?
That's right, come on.
So we have 3 episodes that we can discuss. And as I mentioned in the tease, it's The City on the Edge of Forever and The Trouble with Tribbles, both from the original series and from Next Generation, The Inner Light. I think it's The Inner Light, not just Inner Light, but either way, it's that episode. So we could go chronologically, in which case we would start with The City on the Edge of Forever. And I would like to put Carrie on the spot because you had
I
never
did
seen
watch
it
that one.
Because you'd never seen it before.
I was going to say, I didn't get to the Next Gen episode because I actually watched the pilot, which Netflix writes the pilot, which is
Encounter
like,
at Farpoint, the pilot to Next Generation?
The original Star Trek.
Oh, the cage.
Yeah. And I was like, who are these people? These aren't like the people I know.
So no, they're not.
A little confusing. But I did like that episode.
You like the cage?
It's a good start. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's definitely interesting. It makes you wonder what that series would have been.
But I heard that it didn't actually air until the 80s, though it was filmed before. So it's interesting that that's like
so
the
there's
pilot. Netflix.
So there's it's a pilot that didn't air.
Yeah.
But they used footage from it for a 2-part episode in the first season called The Menagerie. At one point, there was a home video release of The Cage. Before, so some of the footage that wasn't used in Menagerie, at that point, all they could find was black and white footage. So it switched from color to black and white for those scenes.
Got it.
That's the first time I saw it in its entirety as The Cage. And then eventually somebody like looked, you know, a little bit deeper in a vault and was like, oh, no, we have the color prints.
Want to hear, did you know a funny thing with the color green girl? What they had some issues with the color.
The green girl?
Yeah. So they filmed it. She has green makeup on.
Sure.
They sent it off. And the people who were editing felt that was an error, and so they went through and color corrected her to Caucasian and sent it back. And so then they're like, wow, that green makeup test didn't work. So they do it again, different shade of green, send it, and again they send it back. And they've gone through and like color corrected her, thinking like that's an error on the filming part, like she should be a different, like a normal human color. And then finally they get around to, no, she's supposed to be green. I'm like, this would have been solved by an easy phone call.
This seems like a great Twilight Zone episode. You know, something about that person. You know, it'd be like some comment on racial tensions where you would, you know, color correct, I'm using air quotes, you know, a person of a different race.
So I thought that was interesting.
It is very interesting. And it is an interesting place to start because it's not, like you said, it's not what people think about when they think of Star Trek. Good old Captain Pike.
Then I did watch another one because then I watched the regular first episode, which is the...
Well, the Man Trap is the first broadcast, but not the in production order. So,
it's so that's what
there's a lot that goes into it. But what did you think of that one?
I like that one too. So then it was like, oh, this is the people, and it's interesting too because like for people who did not watch Star Trek from the beginning, I'm like, okay, Kirk's actually pretty cute because like older Kirk is okay. He's okay looking.
He's okay.
He's
handsome. He's an older gent.
Yeah, you're like,
you know?
He's fine.
Yeah,
but like young Kirk, you go. Oh, okay. This is why.
Yeah.
I get why you're like, you know. No.
Now you
especially when he's in a battle and he gets his shirt a little ripped open. Yeah, and you're like,
just a little bit.
Yeah, and he's like, you get it and the vibe. And then I thought Spock is very actually facially animated. Like I thought he was going to be more stoic, but he has so many good like eyebrow raises and looks at Kirk, which are hilarious.
I feel like he invented the eyebrow raise.
And I'm like, he doesn't even have a full eyebrow, but he's still like, So that's really funny. And then something I did notice. So never mind. I watched the pilot, that one, and then I did watch the other ones.
City on the Edge of Forever and Trouble with Tribbles, but not Frank's selection. Why do you hate Frank so much?
I ran out of time. I was literally like hurried up and tried to watch him. No, but something I thought was very interesting that is probably different for both of you because you watched this first and then the new Star Trek films. But going back, I like the new Star Trek films even more.
You're talking about the J.J. Abrams
films? Yeah, the J.J. Abrams films. Even more watching the original Star Trek group because I'm like, oh my gosh, I can totally see the connection and like it was such great casting. I'm like... because you're going to be them later. I know they're not, like, exactly the same.
Sure.
But it really, I feel it almost reinforces it, and it makes it more enjoyable, the J.J. Abrams ones, because you can see where they get the inspiration from.
So is your expectation that you're going to power through and watch all 79 of the original episodes?
Oh, I plan to be watching, but I don't know how long it's going to take.
No, but
I'm enjoying it more than I thought. It is a slow pace.
Depends on the week. Yeah, it depends on the episode you select, yeah.
But there's moments that are, like, cheesy, but you kind of laugh at it. And, damn, those dresses are short. My goodness.
Yes, they are.
Well, there's one on the edge, leading into the City on the Edge Forever. There's a scene where Uhura's walking away. I'm like, that's not even a dress. Those are shorts and a shirt that doesn't even go over her butt. So I was like, all right, that's just cool.
Yeah, it's just one of Scotty's red shirts. And so just put some boots on with it. Yeah. Let's dive into City on the Edge of Forever, which to a number of people is considered to be, let's just say, one of the best. I don't want to throw the word best around. But one, by the way, Nicholas Stormy in the chat says, oh, yeah, young Kirk is super cute. And is Nicholas Stormy alone in the chat? So sad. Hey, we're with you. Yes. So you're not really alone. But anyway, so we're going to talk about City on the Edge of Forever first.
Yes.
So. Your thoughts just on the whole, and then Frank and I can dive in a little bit more, but just you had no expectations of anything with this story,
I had none. It is a good episode to watch if you've never seen Star Trek, because it doesn't matter.
It is indeed why I picked it.
Yeah, good one. But then it's nice because you know who these people are enough that you can get them as being the fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
It does have the good time travel conundrum of like, well, wait, should you prevent something happening when you know what it's going to do? Very Doctor Who later.
It's very everything time travel.
Yes, everything time travel.
We talked about Quantum Leap not long ago.
Yeah.
Anytime you time travel, it's like, oh, yeah, you can fix this thing, but, take a look at all these other things.
What it's going to do.
Yeah.
Something in general with Star Trek is their close-ups. They have so many close-ups on reactions all the time.
I think that's more of like a 60s television thing.
I think too.
Especially like the act break is like Spock with the raised eyebrow and like...
Yeah, but there's moments, too, where, like, it's a conversation and they look at, like, everybody's face to get the reaction. It's kind of comedic. But, no, I really like the, I'm blanking her name, the actress who's Kirk's love interest that he actually falls in love with. He doesn't want to just hook up with her. Ellie?
For a change, yes.
Yeah. What I forget what her that actress's name is, but
oh,
I liked
Joan
her.
Collins?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I
good old Edith Keller.
Edith Keller. Yeah.
Yeah, Edith. There we go. Yeah. I was like Ellie.
And Joan Collins, like, you know, just stunning at this point. In
yeah,
life.
She's
yeah.
She looks great. She's adorable. I think her character's really fun, and watching Kirk fall in love with her is fun too. And then like having to decide what to do about it, it's like,
yeah, exactly. Just deciding like, oh, you know, you're gonna have to let her die.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah,
that's all right. That episode aired more than 40 years ago. So yeah, I think that it works so well because it's on the surface seems like what's a simple story. It's a little time travel thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you're just running into some people. You know, you got to get back through.
Yeah.
You got to get back to where you belong. You know, and all of that. But and it just. It takes on such a grandiose thing because of the emotional impact it has to Kirk. And, you know, one of the things that I'll talk about when we get to our Next Generation episode is just sort of some of the emotions beneath the surface. But then when you see this, you forget that the original series is certainly able to address that. You know, it wasn't always just a, you know, space cowboy show, you know.
Well, when they come back, they're kind of like, wait, what happened? Or, like, how are things going? And you could just see the weight of it on the three that have come back through that portal.
Just yeah, like, oh. No, definitely. And, you know, any time that I see this, I'm always reminded of just sort of a kind of delightful performance by DeForest Kelly as McCoy, just because he's, you know, it's like, no, you're like crazy overdosed, so go ahead.
Bigger. Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, bigger. We want more.
Just keep going.
So I always love that. But, yeah, and it's... I don't know. I mean, it for me, it's funny that I mentioned the Twilight Zone. It sort of has like a Twilight Zone feel to it where it's like, yeah, sure, you meet this person, you love her, great, but she like has to die. Not just like, well, you know, if she doesn't die, then there's never going to be, I can't think of like a minor thing, but you know, the monkeys will never be on TV. Okay, we can live with that.
No, yeah. I couldn't.
Well, I mean, I couldn't, but dude, this is, Kirk would probably be like, it will be all right.
I was a little more crude though. I'm like, oh, maybe they can at least hook up before she dies. Like if he knows that, I'm like, okay, you can have a quick little thing, but I'm like, nope, this isn't quite his, like, it's not just
a little variation on hit it and quit it, hit it and kill it. Yeah, but no, I don't think that's the way that that
Kirk
operates.
It's not how he saw it.
No,
not
it's not
this episode.
Not at least not here. Frank, so getting to dive back into this story, did anything new or anything strike you this time around?
It is, one thing, because time travel, as we've talked about before in the past, one of my favorite storytelling devices.
When done well, absolutely agree. Yeah,
I mean, and then when done not well, then it just drives you crazy as you're picking apart all the logic of it.
I'm having trouble thinking of a Star Trek where time travel was not done well. I think they tend to do it well.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, Star Trek IV being one of my favorite films in this series. Yeah,
and this one I thought like it sets up the Guardian Forever.
Yeah,
so cool. And I always felt like, other than the episode of the animated series, never seen again in live action.
And there are, as we mentioned, there's like 750 episodes. At no point could anybody end up like using this device again.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it was used. Peter
and
David
dangerous.
Used it.
I thought they were going to destroy it, actually, at the end. Like, this is too dangerous to have around.
You would think that, but I guess that in some way also
kind of
violates
alive.
The prime directive. Yeah. Sorry, what were we
going to say? Peter David uses it in one of his Imzadi books, and that's how I...
Oh, Peter David does?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Takes place
okay.
in the future, and see how he will travel back to like the present of the next generation to help prevent something that's happening, which is cool. Yeah.
That's very cool.
But so it was cool. And then, you know, as we've talked a little bit off camera as well, too, just the checkered past of it leading into it with Harlan Ellison writing it, changing some of the stuff that he had, like Scotty being a drug pushing drugs in one version of the script.
And, just character. They sort of streamline the story and, you know, somebody else. That's what it is. It's like Bones... The whole Bones storyline, it's someone else. And neither Frank nor I have read it, but there is actually a comic book series that takes Harlan Ellison, who, for those who don't know, one of the preeminent science fiction writers of the 20th century, and he sat down and wrote a Star Trek script, And then when it aired, he hated it because they changed it so much. So his original script has been done as a comic book. And sort of this whole exercise reminded me, like, I really want to read that. I just want to see. Because I've read sort of point by point some of the things that he did that were changed. And it's very different. It's not very episodic television, as far as I'm concerned, at least a few of the things. But, it's interesting that he hated it so much. And yet it's considered at least among the best episodes in the series.
Yeah, I feel it's like anytime award-winning, you
do,
too.
Yeah, if you do a retrospective of the original series, you're going to see that shot of Kirk and Bones, you know, right across the street as Bones is being stopped.
And I think I've seen sort of all sorts of little, you know, not montages, but specials about science fiction. That is always in there because it makes the point that so fundamentally, you know, all time travel in science fiction revolves around. By the way, Nicholas Stormy has a great suggestion for a future episode. Speaking of the Prime Directive, you could do a whole episode on how they routinely ignore it. And we could really go through times they ignore the Prime Directive.
Yes.
You know, it just is most times that it was encountered. It's great, and I think that City on the Edge of Forever is the episode where your friend who is predisposed to maybe like Star Trek, maybe, like Carrie said, saw the movies, whether they be the, you know, the original cast films or the J.J. Abrams films, just like, oh, you know, if you're going to think about watching the series, this is – because I have a list of about 10 episodes that I'll give people. I'm like, you know, if you think you might want to watch it, watch these 10. And it's always in there. It's usually the first one. And you just really get a feel for at least what the show is, even though, you know, they're actually not on the ship all that much. You know? But it's always good to see. And, of course, any time that, you know, you can have Kirk and Spock, you know, dressed in civilian clothes or whatever, which is another reason. Well, the piece of the action, they're dressed very, you know, very stunningly. Which is also on my list of 10, by the way. For me, as I said last week, we'll move on to our second episode. It's just always has been, and I was definitely biased in this way because it was my mother's favorite. And as I've talked about before on the show, as soon as we bought a VCR, we got a VCR for Christmas 1984. Yes, I remember. And every night at midnight, Channel 11 in New York would show Star Trek reruns. So my mom recorded 5 nights a week. And she just kept going until we got The Trouble with Tribbles. And it took a lot more than 79 days because, oh, the power went out. Oh, it wasn't set right. Oh, the tape wasn't in. Oh, they showed the same one that they showed a month ago. Yeah, so they didn't follow any kind of... You know, so it took forever to get it. And we actually got it. It was like, oh, wow, this is great. And, you know, as someone who... Look, I love sci-fi, but I always loved comedy, especially growing up. You know, I mean, it's such a funny episode. And when Star Trek does comedy well, it's great. Reference, again, to Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. When it's not done well, it's very difficult to sit through Star Trek V, Scotty, the slapstick humor. It's just, you know, you're better than that.
Even the row, row, row your boat?
Even that, yeah. Most of it, you know. The marshmallow, there's just
even watching the first time I watched it, I was like, that just, why are you saying it like that? It's so weird to me.
It's just like, it's just not entertaining. Yeah. So skip Star Trek V. That's what we're trying to tell you.
And whatever point in the future where we as a society decide, like, we're going to stop calling it marshmallows and then be called marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
Let's go in the future to stop that from happening.
So there's a lot of things that are great about The Trouble with Tribbles, the episode. I want to also start with Carrie again, because this would be the first time you saw it.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that really struck me were the Klingons. I'm like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. That's it?
Well, and now you understand what we were talking about on literally the first episode of this show.
Yeah.
Star Trek Weekly. Just like, okay, so they look like that in Star Trek Discovery, but then 10 years later, everybody's like, yeah, these are Klingons.
Yeah, so, they just look like normal people.
Yeah.
They have nothing about them that's different. Even the facial hair, you're like, eh. So some of them, it's a bad stick-on one, but that's okay.
Some of it is very bad.
But nothing about them. Like, at least Spock, you know, that has the ears and the eyebrows different. I felt with the Klingons, they could have done something a little bit more. Like, they felt, give them a unibrow or, like, sharper cheekbones or something. It just felt so, like...
Right, and there are aliens that are well done on the original series. And the Klingons, it's almost like they're not from another planet.
No.
You know, they're... like from Central America or something.
Yeah, you know, they're just another country.
They're just from further south somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
It's a group of Guatemalans.
And, very white. I thought Klingons were more brown.
Well, yeah. Those are your Michael Dorn, Commander Worf. It is a good point. And it's very striking for people familiar with the movies and the later series.
Yeah.
To see these Klingons.
Yeah. When you first see them, too,
as Patty Duke's father calls them,
the first, the leader one who was talking, yes. I was like, he's actually really charming. I like him, and he's funny. But then the other ones were all mean and grumpy. So I'm like, okay, well, one of them was not bad.
Yeah.
Someone was saying these guys are just had beards. Like they weren't,
mostly just beards. Yeah.
Or at least in this episode, there's nothing. It didn't look like their makeup was weird, though I do think Spock has weird skin tone color.
In this episode?
No, in general.
Oh, in general.
In all the episodes I've been watching, I don't like the complexion or whatever the lighting is doing to Spock's makeup. I don't like it. And then there's weird eyeshadow on a lot of men.
Yes, that's true.
I was like, why does Sulu have eyeshadow?
Well.
And why does...
Do you really need an answer to that?
Well, no, everybody, there's... Yeah, it's just, it doesn't... It looks weird.
No, it does. And the interesting thing to think about is, especially in the case of my mother, who was in high school when the original series was on, is most people were watching it in black and white. So just imagine what it looked like. I think that helps it look, and I'm using the air quotes, alien, is to have sort of the eyeshadow and things like that.
In navy blue. Just looks like a little girl who got into her mom's makeup kit. Just doesn't work. Anyways, no, but the more trouble is it's fun and a little more quirky, and I just like that they're little puff things that some of them move, some don't, and how they hold it is there's no weight in it, and they're like, yeah, here you go, and toss it.
There are seven or eight moments in the show, in this episode, that I like to isolate as, oh, that's my favorite, no, that's my favorite. But my definite favorite is when Kirk's there and they open the compartment over his head and they just keep falling down because he's legitimately, Shatner is legitimately getting pissed because props guys are throwing more and more tribbles and he's not expecting them and they're hitting him in the head. Oh, and you can tell they're having fun with it because maybe he wasn't that popular on the set. And this is the second season, I think. Yeah, it's the middle of the second season. Mm. And already they were just like, we're just going to hit him as hard as we can. That's one of my favorite moments. And yeah, I just, the tribbles are adorable. You know?
Well, just like Spock says, they have an effect on people and then on humans. He's like, I'm not being affected.
Yeah.
And everyone looks at him. That was really funny, too. And he's like, okay, never mind, take it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, with Trial and Tribulations, we had this night episode. It's always nice to see kind of those alternate takes on there. So you see that it's the Deep Space Nine crew throwing the tribbles down the hatch.
Yeah, that's right.
Keep ending up on Kirk. I was like, oh, that's a nice little funny little ad from that series.
Yeah, which I did not have the time to watch. Originally, when we talked about this, last week, I had no idea that I was going to exponentially add to the size of my family. I wanted to watch that. I wanted to watch More Tribbles, More Troubles, the animated series episode, and I didn't watch any of those. But I watched these, so, I at least got those in.
Yeah.
Only because on this very iPad in front of me, these are all on Netflix, because I certainly wasn't going to be able to watch them on the TV. But anyway, I don't know. I love the idea of the tribbles and then the idea that the space station is overrun with them. I'm a huge fan of Cyrano Jones, who is the con man who, of course, peddling the tribbles. And again, someone who could have shown up more than once, and he did show up in the aforementioned More Tribbles, More Troubles, the animated series episode. But, he was right up there with Harry Mudd, and you don't hear him mentioned nearly enough. And he's just funny. It's a very old style kind of humor, which, is very fitting in probably 1967. But, there's a very specific exchange that that always stands out as, again, one of my favorite moments in the episode, which is the how does he phrase it exactly? He says, is that a joke or is that an offer? And he's like, that's an offer. That's a joke. It's just the timing. I just was like, you don't get a lot of that on Star Trek. You don't get a lot of that in science fiction. And so just to have this presence, someone who's legitimately so funny. So The real question will be, who will play Cyrano Jones on Star Trek Discovery? Someone else from The Office, maybe. The guy who played Toby on The Office, perhaps. I don't think so, actually.
We can't get Steve Carell. He can't come in.
I don't know that he's... I don't think that they can match his rate right now.
He's a big Star Trek fan.
He could be. That's true.
Do it for the love of it.
But anyway, so Frank, getting to revisit the Tribbles.
It's always interesting because I think of... And my first go-to is more of a contemporary show, but like The X-Files, where either is a very much a, you know, a procedural of the week or is a mythology episode, but then every so often they throw in that kind of ringer episode, the one like if you get like Darren Morgan writing it.
Oh yeah, right, absolutely.
Where you get that really sense of humor, that skewed look at The X-Files, you kind of start poking fun, but with still maintaining the integrity.
The one where they have the, like a TV show made about them.
Jose Chung from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
That one is always a good one too. Those episodes that are funny and entertaining, but still keep the universe and the integrity of the show intact. And so, like going back to watch this again, it's like, oh yeah, it's just like this came, you know, I guess what 30 years ahead of it, but still the idea, like, hey, you can take this science fiction show, but inject humor into it, and not interrupt the integrity of the show.
Kind of the interesting thing about, you know, the two original series episodes that we're talking about, City of the Edge of Forever and Trouble with Tribbles, very different feelings across the board, but they're both great episodes. And that it's impressive that at that point on network television, you were able to kind of have those kinds of, you know, diverse, you know, that there wasn't the expectations like, but you know, every week it kind of has to be like this, you know, and you're just getting some, you know, great storytelling.
Yeah, because it's not like Bonanza at the time where it's like, all right, guys, Bonanza writers, this one's got to be a super hilarious episode. And like, this one's like, it'd be like a really, and it's like watching these wild swings and the types of stories. No, Bonanza was like, yeah, pretty straightforward in the types of stories you're getting.
And hey, they rode that train for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, can't go wrong. Anyway, Frank, I wanted to sort of, anything in particular that, you know, watching it, you're just like, oh, these are the things that I like. Anything you don't like? Because I forgot to ask that for the previous episode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, it's just like, I'll take these Klingons over what we're getting in Discovery. You know, just give me these down home.
Shouldn't it be like a hybrid in between the two? Like, I just want them to look a little bit like not exactly like a human. And I understand that most sci-fi, we do go the lazy route that the aliens are very human-like, and we just change some things about them, which I'm like, okay, fine, that's probably the most easy thing of just have a...
Yeah, they're just like, oh, you look exactly like a person, but you have two hearts. There you go.
Yeah, okay, whatever. So I would have wanted some sort of, like either skin tone is a totally unnatural color. I like the more 90s where they have, like, the bumpy forehead thing, be like, all right, cool, that's different. Or where the hairline is, like, just something visually different, because otherwise you're just like, so they're space pirates. They have very flamboyant clothing. Like, that's about it.
Very flamboyant clothing.
Well, I think it's always a slippery slope when you're going back into a episode or into a series that has been around and trying to justify, at least in universe wise, why certain things look the way that they are.
Right, because it's not like their fault. It's the, everything that followed after the fact. What's that?
Wasn't there something that like Klingons do? There's just like weird genetic engineering and stuff that happens to them.
Yeah, that's why they explained it. I think on Enterprise, and the whole idea was basically that they engineered some Klingons to look a little bit more humanoid, I think, to be able to blend in a little bit better. It's not a great explanation, but at least it is one, you know.
I mean, and it's like, I feel like maybe when they're actually producing that the series, that episode originally, you know, the budgets that they're working with, they don't have enough time to do like fancy prosthetics or anything like that.
No, so they got to do. But how much money they spent on Tribbles?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, they had to do the best that they can. And now it's like, you know, later writers like, let's see, how can we justify this stuff?
Color their hair like an unnatural color? Like, give them an anime blue wig or something, you know? Just something so it doesn't look...
And then the problem is, like, when you look at, like, the Andorans, they're blue, they've got antenna. It's like, great, how about just a little bit of that?
Yeah.
You know, like, just something.
Or even, like, you do a little bit of color, like, again, like blue or pink or, you know, just something unnatural on their skin tone.
Yeah.
You know? Nicholas points out Worf was very uncomfortable about any Klingon appearance questions.
Yes, that was something that I referenced on this show, was that I kind of liked that was the way they addressed it at that time.
Yeah,
actually, it's in that Deep Space Nine episode. And it's just like, those are Klingons? And he just said, we don't discuss it with outsiders.
Yeah.
It's like ashamed that they had Klingons that looked like that.
Yeah. We just are always like, guys, we really don't know the answer. Let's just have Worf just
like lift up that rug.
One of the other great things about the episode is I can't think of a better Chekhov episode than this. And it's because he has
so many great jokes. Yes.
And, it, you know, they started to realize like, oh, you know, he kind of looks like Davy Jones from the Monkees. He's kind of cute. Let's, you know, let's get him out there. And I just loved that he thought that everything was Russian. You know, it was invented by a little old lady from Leningrad. I just love all of that. And I don't think we ever see it ever again from him, anything approaching that, you know?
Maybe it's a shore leave, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, he's all business the rest of the time. But yeah. I just like sort of the recurring, the joke running through it. And then one of my other favorite moments from this episode is when Scotty's explaining to Kirk how the fight started. And he's going through all the things, and he's like, well, they said this about you. And he's like, oh, so that's when the fight started. No, sir. You know, I think that, you're a grown man. That's not going to bother you. He's like, no. And then there's the ship. They insulted the ship. And then I think even Kirk gets that. And just the idea that Scotty's like, great, I can catch up on my technical journals. You know, he's like, this is my real vacation now. Like, I'm actually in my quarters catching up on my technical journals.
I even like the joke with McCoy, and they're like, how did the Tribbles, like... He's like, I don't know yet.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not sure. I had one, and then there's more. And
yeah.
Like, those jokes were funny, too. Or he's like, yeah, I'm going to...
Very, very risque for 1967, by the way. You know, it's... yeah. And...
I don't know. There's some, like, in... I think it was, yeah, the men something. When
the man trap?
Yeah, the man trap. What woman's walking away, and two guys are like, yeah, we'll get a look a piece of that. And kind of, like, just very... If she had heard it, but it's so entertaining to watch now. Like, well, yeah, that's
right.
What
but
I
it's at
expect.
A time when people were uncomfortable with the word pregnant, and you know, leering at women was just considered, you know,
the
national pastime. Yeah. there's always one. It's not a flaw with the episode, but when you stop to think about it,
What's the flaw?
When they talk about getting all the Tribbles off the ship,
yeah,
and they're like, oh, you didn't put them out in space. No, that's heartless. I sent them over to the Klingon ship. What do you think the Klingons did with them?
Sent them out into space.
Or, you know, just murdered them or ate them or, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like you sent them to the San Diego Zoo.
It's just as bad. It was like in humans. You left someone in there with food. Doesn't mean you really killed them, but you essentially did.
But in humans, really, it's certainly not the time or place to talk about the giant teleporting dog and how I was able to overlook everything because of how much I liked it. For those who don't know, Carrie and I do Marvel TV Weekly Monday nights tomorrow night. Anyway, so we could talk about these episodes forever, but I do want to dive into The Next Generation, The Inner Light, which Carrie did not watch.
I didn't watch, but real quick before that, a show that I am part of, that if you guys don't know is already back, is History Vikings. It is so awesome. We had our premiere. The premiere was last Wednesday. So tune in for AfterBuzz. We do it at 8 p.m. and Pacific Standard Time. But you can watch it yourself so you can be up to date on history. The thing about it awesome is Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is pretty crazy in it. He's a Bishop Haymond. There's going to be 10 episodes, so the first episode already aired. It was a nice two-hour premiere. And it is a critically acclaimed series from the creator and sole writer Michael Hirst, the Academy Award-winning film Elizabeth, and Emmy and Golden Globe-nominated series, The Tudors. And so the big thing this season is who will rise. So pretty much who is going to take... control of the throne, especially over in Catacut, like who's going to be in charge. The other thing too is, it is at 9/8 central. That was the premiere. And what else? Yep, it's just pretty much, if you guys don't know about Vikings, you have four other seasons to catch up on, but it's a family saga that tells a remarkable tale of the lives and epic adventures of the raiders and explorers of the Dark Ages. And so, yeah, premiered November 9th at 9/8 Central on History, so now it would be at... It's... For us, it airs at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so adjust for your local listing.
10 Eastern.
10 Eastern, thank you. Yes,
so people on the East Coast always need to be told what time it airs for them. As someone who, you know, lived in New York for the first 27 years of my life, it's just, you have to tell them when it is their time, because they'll never be able to figure it
out. They're like, wait, what time?
Yeah. I have to add what? How many subtract?
But it's pretty epic, guys, so I would go check out.
And Carrie knows. She does the after show right
here. Yeah, and then our engineer, good old Steve, is on that, too. Yeah, see? Vikings.
So, see, you have to check that out.
Yeah.
But something else you should check out.
I know. I didn't get to it.
Star Trek The Next Generation.
I'm sorry.
The Inner Light.
How dare you, Carrie.
But you know what? There's a thing. Did you guys see? There's, like, they sing... someone did a montage of Picard singing essentially a Christmas carol. I forget which Christmas carol it is, but it's taking like a word from random episodes. Yeah, and then the flute thing is in there too. So I was like, I saw part of it.
There you go.
Which, by the way, I was reading that we're jumping ahead for the episode, but there's apparently a deleted scene from Star Trek Nemesis where he's talking to Data and he's just like fiddling around with the flute, which is kind of a nice touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, so this was your choice.
Yes.
And I wanted to sort of let you start off with telling us and Nicholas Stormy in the chat and everybody watching the archive afterwards why you chose this episode.
I think much like as we kind of with Carrie last week saying, hey, you know, if you haven't watched a lot of different episodes, we're talking about like Blink for Doctor Who. I feel like this is a nice standalone episode for Star Trek Next Generation that you can watch this. And if this intrigues you, the storytelling, the acting, then if this hooks you, then I think you're on board to explore more of the episodes. And as a standalone, this is just, I think this works on all cylinders.
On board, you got beamed up.
I got out. Yep, it beamed me right up into viewership.
So it's interesting because look, The Next Generation was produced and aired in a much touchier, feelier time than the original series. So you're not going to be dealing with sort of this level of emotions to this, but it is the kind of depth of character we're able to get for Jean-Luc Picard in 7 seasons that made me choose him last week as my number one captain, because we just got to know him better. It's really, you know, 7 seasons of Shatner's Kirk. Who knows how I would have felt. But, and it's interesting because on the surface, this is just a kind of a standalone episode that it's very much like episodes of series that could never really have any lasting effects, any reference to it. But I mean, in his mind, he lives, what, 50 years in the course of those 25 minutes or more? Which is interesting because watching it again, it's like, how many times have we seen Patrick Stewart old? You know, in the final episode, All Good Things, we see him old. In Logan, we see him old as a 90-something Professor Xavier. And it's just like, man, he's just always like looking older. And, you know, he just seems so happy.
Stewart is always old.
Right, but they make him look older.
Okay, because I was like, always. Like, I've never thought of Patrick Stewart being like, super young, but he always looked good
old.
This
is what, 22, 23 years ago. So,
yeah.
You know, even when he was young, he didn't
age.
Yeah. He does not age, so he needs to have all the prosthetics to make it look like he aged.
He has a portrait in his attic somewhere.
He's got a portrait of Jonathan Frakes up in his attic.
The one thing I will say about this episode is just like watching it back is, man, Patrick Stewart was fit as heck.
Yeah.
And this other society that he joins in, of course, their outfit, just nice and billowy and light, just what you want for a planet suffering from crippling dehydration and imminent destruction. But just a nice kind of blousy, kind of loose sleeveless shirt. Man, he's just lean, the veins popping out.
Yeah, a lot.
The inspiration for as you age of like, I want to look like that.
Oh, if I could look like that, you know. I would trade the hair to be as fit as Captain Picard. And it's interesting though because it's an episode that we barely see the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Troy's not even in it. I mean, everybody else, like, I was thinking until late in the episode, I'm like, Geordi's not even in this, but then we see him for like a minute.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because it's like, there's not a lot of interaction with the rest of it. This is really a Picard story, which is great because he's a great character. And it's just interesting to kind of explore the idea of, you know, look, he has a very full life in one very specific respect. But this just hammers home for him, here's all the stuff you don't have. And it's interesting because watching the episode, we meet his character's son, and I'm like, oh God, this guy's such a dork. Picard would never have a son like that. And then I read up on it, and that's Patrick Stewart's actual son.
Yep.
So I'm like, all right, I guess he would. But I was just like, really? So
well, that's a little bit almost a throwback to The Cage, because in that they're kind of like, this is the life you wanted.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to explore those kinds.
Right. And then I forget the title of it, but there's another episode that sort of revolves around, you know, him not having the injury to his heart, and then he never would have become a captain. Mm-hmm. You know, he sort of would have been a low level like ensign basically for the rest
of
his life.
Do you agree with Nicholas in the chat says this episode felt more like the Twilight Zone to me?
I don't know if it necessarily felt like that. I mean,
well, it's not a planet of people who have pig faces, yes, or, you know, something that there's, it's missing the really dark turn of, yes, the Twilight, mm-hmm, Zone. You know, I mean, it's certainly an interesting point, you know, and I would say there's more of a Twilight Zone feel to City on the Edge of Forever, in all honesty. But little this bit. One, I don't think, it doesn't make me think of the Twilight Zone, but it also doesn't make me think of the 80s Twilight Zone, the revisited Twilight Zone that there was, or Twilight Zone the movie. But yeah, it's great because it's just a fun character study and getting to see, you know, him be him. And I had only seen this episode once. I definitely had watched it. I didn't really remember much about where it was going or what we were going to see. So it was great to have a reason to watch it again because, yeah, you know, it's, as I mentioned, like sometimes there'll be reruns of Next Generation on BBC America, depending on what episode it is. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna watch some of this. This is just one I haven't come across in, well, ever since it was originally broadcast.
Really?
I haven't come across it in reruns. Hmm. I'm not saying that it isn't.
Yeah.
It's just I haven't happened upon it. So it was fun to, mm-hmm, to revisit this particular story.
Yeah. The thing I guess is interesting as opposed to maybe the original series as much, but like this one, since it had a little bit more of a larger ensemble cast, I felt like you had more character-specific episodes where a few of the rest of the cast would kind of just disappear for that episode. You might not see a Crusher. You might not see Geordi. More often than not, you'd see at least Picard, Riker, and Data, at least in some aspects. But I feel like the rest of the cast could kind of, you know, fade in and out as story.
Yeah, there are definitely plenty of episodes, you know, where you wouldn't necessarily have time for Geordi or, like you said, Crusher or Wesley Crusher, by the way.
No,
yeah. Kind of random question, but tied in for both of you, since you've seen so many of the episodes or all the episodes, what would draw you to, and do you often watch reruns? Like, if it's on, are you just like, oh yeah, hey, I've seen this, like, familiarity, or like, I've already seen this, I don't care to watch it?
No, it would depend. For me, there are some holodeck episodes that I like. The Dixon Hill private detective episodes, Borg episodes. We can do a whole show about how much I hate Q. I think the actor is great. I hate the concept of Q because Q is magic and Star Trek doesn't have magic. But anyway, that's a story for another time. So, especially Best of Both Worlds, either of those parts, I would certainly watch the episode Chain of Command. There's a few like big cornerstone moments of the show. Anything in the first season, if Riker doesn't have the beard, I'm going to flip past it. I just know I'm not going to enjoy it.
Time Zero?
Yeah, well, I guess in general, though, I'm just going to just skip it. You know, is Tasha Yar there? Does Riker have no beard? You know, is Worf inexplicably the science officer? You know, so but your answer to that question?
I feel like right now watching it is more a nostalgia factor. So pretty much if I came across an episode, I will at least check it out for a while. And then if it's an episode that really resonated with me when I first watched it, then I'll probably watch it the whole way through. But if it's one that I really didn't care that much about, I might watch it for a few minutes and go like, oh, man, whoa, geez, that's really aged poorly. Or that's, oh, wow, okay, mm-hmm, that actually holds up a little bit better. You know, and then I'll just move on.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about this episode, too, is as Picard stays in this other life, he's living this other life, he just lets his hair go. There's some bad wig work, though.
There is. I like the concept of it, that he just kind of lets it go, like, yeah, a, you know, well, Bernie Sanders, for lack of someone else that I can think of. And yeah, and at some point you're just like, you know, they're just like sticking like cotton and stringing it out. Aww. Or something. You know, it's, yeah.
And the higher definition TVs that we're able to view these episodes on now does not do that makeup justice.
No.
Yes. That's what I mean. The season, first season, my whole, some of the makeup is not so great.
It's
some
true.
Of the lighting and focus, I'm like, that shot's out of focus. It's a close-up on their face.
But again, you know, when your screen was not that big and you were watching in black and white, it didn't matter. Less of an excuse for Next Generation. But, yeah, it's that's the interesting thing about when it comes to high def and makeup. I remember in the late 90s when I was a page at NBC in New York, they trotted in the high def cameras to a dress rehearsal for Saturday Night Live just to see what it looked like. And all the makeup they used for everything, you could see all the seams, you could see everything. And they're like, oh, so we're gonna have to up our game for high def. And obviously that's not as drastic as to what you see for things that were filmed with Saturday Night cameras. But you look at it now and you're like, oh yeah, that did not, like, something that looked really cool in your mind, you're like, oh, is that what it looked like?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, especially special effects and things, you know, that in my mind looked really good. They probably don't look as good.
Real quickly, I will say the emotional moments still hit in this episode for me. I thought, all the beats in there still get me. I thought it was really well. And I actually watched an episode from the season 6, Lessons, which kind of follows up on this. I was just curious. And it's just, I felt like that was just a nice story point where Picard is, he kind of gets attracted to and starts entering a relationship with a new officer on the ship and shares with her his experience on this other planet or this existence. And it was just really cool hearing him kind of reflect on what that experience meant to him and the life that he led.
Can you watch those back to back and not feel like you've missed something?
No, not at all. I mean, because Star Trek is just, there's a lot of like, it's pretty much just plug in and you can watch an episode.
Okay.
But that was a nice, like, I felt like that it was, I love that the writer's room felt like, this is a really important moment in Picard's life. I felt like it was worth kind of readdressing and have it be a vital part of his character going forward.
Yeah, that was actually some of the comments that I was reading. It's from sort of the same interview with Ron Moore, who went on to create Battlestar Galactica, he didn't create it, but he, rebooted it. Sorry, Glenn A. Larson. But he was talking about how, this was just sort of like, this is the script for this episode. And it was in subsequent weeks and months, they're like, actually, that was a really significant thing that happened to him. Mm-hmm. And they felt like they needed to go back and at least acknowledge that it happened, which is great because that was not what they were planning. You know, they were just like, we got to get a TV show on the air. We got to get it done. We got to get a script out there. And at least taking the time to realize that this was actually very important. So,
and I know you mentioned the Nemesis deleted scene.
Yes.
The first thing at the end of the episode, as he's holding the case with the flute in it, I was like, man, I wonder after generations if that actually survived. And so it's nice to know that, all right, it made it through safe and sound.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if that deleted scene is on the DVD for Nemesis. I actually have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to look.
Yeah.
But speaking of DVDs of Star Trek movies, by the way, we should talk about what next week's show is going to be, which I hope to be able to be there, but, there's a lot of diapers to be changed. Believe me, and because my 2-year-old's still in diapers, so there were already a lot of diapers to be changed, so now there's just more. Thank you, Steve. But next week's episode, whether I'm here or not, is going to be the oft-referenced, we're going to have to do an episode about Star Trek Generations. And so just the standard version of it, I don't know. You can get it on iTunes. I don't think it's on Netflix, and I don't think it's on CBS All Access. But you'll find it on some of those places, Amazon, iTunes, whatever. Or maybe you own the DVD like I do, or the Blu-ray. We're going
to the library for free.
You could do, if it's there for free, that's great. It's great. It's sort of a good movie to talk about because everything about it should have been great. I was so excited for that movie.
Yeah, I'll give it up for cinematography. The cinematography in that movie is outstanding.
And what number is that?
Seven. Yeah, so Star Trek Generations we will talk about next week. But anyway, let us know what you thought of these three episodes. Go ahead and tell us some of your favorites from the original series. We keep doing these enough. Maybe we'll have to pick, we'll distinctively say, you have to pick your favorite episode of Deep Space Nine or Enterprise or the animated series. You know, who knows? Boy, if we're doing that for the animated series, we've done a lot of these.
Your favorite Geordi episode.
Yeah, well, that, you know, I mean, your favorite, really, anybody. You know, your favorite holodeck episode, your favorite Klingon episode. Don't ask me to pick my favorite Q episode.
No?
Although I do have one. Oh. Yeah. It's the episode of Voyager that he was on, actually. Okay. I kind of liked that he showed up there. That was the one time where he didn't bother me.
You know, like, what about Deep Space Nine where he's boxing?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so you see, there's so many things to forget about. Anyway, that'll be next week. And don't forget to watch Vikings in the interim, but also watch Star Trek Generation. For me, Christian Blatt, I'm at Christian DMZ, and you can find Carrie and I tomorrow night, Marvel TV Weekly. We're going to have a guest, Woo! Ryan Sands, who's one of the dads on Runaways, which is a Marvel show for Hulu.
Nice.
I'm excited.
You can tell.
Sorry, that sounds so excited.
That didn't sound exciting.
Oh my gosh, no,
that
sorry.
Sounded like Michael talking about The Gifted, our He's like, co-host.
No, I'm excited. That's awesome, because though how that episode airs, we won't have the newest episode.
Well, if it's seen four of them, though.
Yeah. Well, now, so. I'm more excited now after the last week's episode.
I haven't seen four. I was busy changing diapers.
You're kind of busy
I'm
going to
watch
that,
it tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes, you all can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E.
And you follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. And I like Nicholas Stormy saying he'd love a whole episode about Gul Dukat.
Oh, and Deep Space Nine is his favorite show, which, you know, it's number two for me in terms of the, you know, the newer. I guess so it's number three overall. I can't say it's number two. It's number three. It's the original series, Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine. I like that better than most of us. Anyway, thank you, everybody. And thank you, Nicholas Stormy, for being in the chat.
Yay! So,
but your name is Nicholas. I'm sorry. Nicholas, you're a girl. Well, look, Nicholas, I mean, I don't think that I really made a major faux pas there. But anyway, we appreciate you staying in the chat. Anyway, we will see you guys and girls and men and women and other humanoids next Sunday at 10 Pacific. Live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.